Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome into Season 4, Episode 6 of the Canucks Speakeasy Podcast. I'm Pete.
And I'm Doug.
Doug, I guarantee you this is going to be the best game flight of the year so far. So let's get into it.
The Canucks, still winless on the season, had a road trip down to Seattle and came away with a 5-4 victory against the Kraken, still remaining undefeated against them. Connor Garland and Andrei Kuzmenko each had a goal and an assist, and Ilya Mikheyev had two goals in the win.
Following up their first win of the season, the Canucks host the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, we all remember what happened the last time the Penguins came to town, and general firestorm ensued afterwards. Not this time. The Canucks win 5-1. Bo Horvat with a couple goals. Kuzmenko and Mikheyev with a couple points. Also of note, Guillaume Brisebois finally gets a point as a Canuck.
The Canucks, riding high on a two-game winning streak, hosted the New Jersey Devils and unfortunately ended up losing 5-2. Bo Horvat did have two goals and JT Miller had two assists, but it was another loss for the Canucks.
And then what a game against the Ducks. Honoring my favorite Canuck of all time, Kevin Bieksa, the Canucks score 5 in the third to win it 8-5. Elias Pettersson with a 5-point night. Andrei Kuzmenko with 4 points, including his first hat trick in just his 11th game in the NHL. Bo Horvat, 2 goals and an assist as well. And Doug, we were at that game. That was a fun game last night. It was great to be there. We had a good little crew for that. Got to meet some people as well. That was a hell of a fun game.
No, it was a really great game. Like you said, Bieksa is definitely one of the most charismatic Canuck players of all time. You know, and it was a great night. Huge win. I did find the ceremony to be a little bit lackluster. Like, it was just Daniel came out, and obviously he gave a little bit of a nice speech, and I know the PR and social media for the Canucks were posting a bunch of videos of Bieksa, you know, at the morning practice, and then his big speech in the dressing room. But during the game, yeah, like, I thought there might be a few more, like, video tributes from guys like Luongo or Kessler, but it was really only a Daniel Sedin and I believe a Henrik Sedin video tribute. That was it. I thought it was cool, though, that they actually gave him a piece of the stanchion and the puck he scored, that famous goal against the San Jose Sharks to get the Canucks to the Stanley Cup final against the Boston Bruins back in 2011. But yeah, I thought the ceremony overall was a little lackluster for me. I don't know.
I know what you're saying, man. It was definitely a little on the brief side, especially when the Canucks sent an email out that day saying, hey, be in your seats by 6:45, and not much really happened. It was just kind of the general intro and video presentation, which was all very, very cool, but yeah, that's stuff you get every game. I thought, you know, you'd see as well maybe some tributes from, like you said, Luongo or Schneider or Sammy Salo or whoever. I don't know if that was all by BX's design, though, maybe wanting to keep the focus off of him a bit. I can see him doing that. I do think, as you said, that the Canucks media and PR team did an awesome job of just pumping out all this stuff, you know, the dressing room speeches, him mic'd up during practice. And I think that was really kind of more of what they were wanting to do with this, is create a lot of really good promo. But yeah, during the game itself, there wasn't really anything BX-wise after the intro. There was a couple little things, as you said. And I also don't know why it was just Daniel. I don't know where Henrik was, but it was just Daniel. But man, that thing, that framed piece that he got with the stanchion, which actually lights up as well. It lights up in the puck. Man, like, for someone who's like a Canuck memorabilia fan, I'd love to get my hands on that. That's an amazing souvenir.
Yeah, I thought it, obviously, you know, Bieksa getting a piece of the stanchion of the puck makes sense. But like you said, Pete, if they sold pieces of the stanchion from that game,
oh man,
I would buy one. Like, I think it'd be great. Grace would probably kill me and be like, it's sitting in the closet. We're not hanging that thing up. But I thought it was really cool as well. And obviously the game was great. It helped that we were amongst great company. Shout out to Andy and Riot Survivor who joined us. Obviously, you know, we met Clay in person. Jeff Y on Twitter as well. So it was great for that aspect. And the game was tremendous, obviously. It was probably the most entertaining game for the Canucks all season as far as an offensive statement went. But like typical Canuck fashion, it wasn't, you know, it was kind of down to the wire there. Anaheim scored a couple of late goals and did definitely make it interesting.
Yeah, we'll get into all that for sure. I just going back to the stanchion, they've obviously cut that stanchion up. I want to know where the rest of that is. Like, well, like, where is the rest of that stanchion? Like, Kevin Bieksa gets maybe like 20% of it. But what are they doing with the rest of it? I want to know. Is it sitting somewhere in like an X-Files type Canucks warehouse in the back, you know? Or is it going to go into an exhibit somewhere in the arena? But I'm wondering about that. And yeah, we're gonna talk about all four of the games. Hey, don't look now, but the Canucks have won 3 out of 4. I know it's wasn't the prettiest at times, but they have won 3 out of 4. We're gonna get into all the games. No guests this week, so we got 4 games to talk about. We also got Dan and Brendan's segments coming up on this episode. So lots of Canucks stuff coming your way as usual. Also, you can follow us online as well. I'm on Twitter as Pete_Gass, and the podcast is at Canucks Speak.
You can give me a follow on Twitter at Doug Venn, and be sure to check out the playlist Pete and I keep curating on Spotify. It's the Canucks Speakeasy outro playlist. As usual, another funky jam is going to be getting added to the playlist at the end of this episode.
Doug, before we get right into it all, how's the week been? I know it was good to see you yesterday, and again, like that was a lot of fun at the game. Anything new, exciting? Anything going on? Staying dry?
Yeah. I mean, trying to stay dry for sure. It seems like the rain hasn't let up in the last 48 hours one bit. I will say this, Pete. I know you had mentioned it a few episodes back. The show The Bear. I finally started watching it. I absolutely love it.
Nice.
Thought it's amazing.
Wicked.
Music is great in it. Obviously, just the whole aspect of how kitchens run, I thought was great. Definitely recommend that if anyone hasn't seen it yet. Pete, great shout by you. Definitely.
Cheers.
And yeah, other than that, looks like I might be going on the road next week for work. So we might not be dropping an episode next week. But other than that, I've been, like you said, trying to stay dry, trying to, stay out of trouble. It was great to see you last night as well. What about you, Pete? How's your week been?
It's been all right. A little slow at work, but it's allowed me to get some kind of back burner projects done. I actually brought a growler of my beer home today, so I'm drinking my Lua Deepa double IPA, Azica dry hop. So I'm drinking that while we record right now, treating myself to some beer on a Friday. Otherwise, geez, I haven't really done much. I've been kind of lying low, and that's kind of what I like to do at this time of year, really. You know, it's like summer, there's always stuff going on, and then there's a part of me that's just like itching to kind of hibernate a little bit. So I've just been kind of taking it easy, getting out in the park, going for runs when I can, but otherwise just kind of chilling at home, watching lots of sports. I mean, it's as you know, a great time of year for sports. There's tons on, so just been taking all that in, putting on records, trying to go to bed at reasonable times. Yeah, just kind of being pretty boring, but this weekend's looking to be a little bit better. I did go to a show, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on, so I did get out of the house for something and of course go to the game, so not a total hermit, but really just kind of chilling out. Doug, before we get into everything, almost forgot, we have to do our 3 stars of the month. We haven't done this for a while. This will be our first one for the season. So let's start off and do our first edition of the 3 stars of the month for October 2022.
I think he'll be back for an encore yet tonight. Fans haven't left. They're still here. And still the 3-star selections to come.
All right. So my 3rd star for the month, I don't think it's going to be much of a surprise given, I thought he'd been playing well all year, and he was a little bit snake-bitten, but obviously after his performance last night, he's definitely deserving, and that is Andrei Kuzmenko would be my 3rd star of the month for October. My 2nd star is a man who is currently tied for 2nd in goals in the NHL with Erik Karlsson. Yes, that Erik Karlsson in San Jose. But it's our captain, Bo Horvat. I think Horvat's been very, he's playing really well right now, and he's scoring goals at a pretty insane clip. So Horvat would be my second star of the month. And my first star, I think, by no surprise, it's Elias Pettersson. I think he has been the most consistent and the best Canuck, both offensively and defensively. And it doesn't hurt that he had a 5-point night last night. So yeah, star one for me would be Elias Pettersson.
All right. I mean, I know a lot of the stuff you said, though, that's happened after October, but I can't disagree with those picks. Those are all pretty good choices. For me, it's all forwards as well, but slightly different. Number three for me, I actually gave to JT Miller. I know that his defensive gaffes drive this fan base nuts, but there's a few things that I liked, as well as the fact that he's third on the team in hits for the month of October. Just a little thing, but he is out there. He was second on the team in goals for the month of October as well. I know the minus four rating he had kind of hurts him, but I'm still given, I mean, let's be honest, it was pretty, there's not a lot of guys we could really choose from for this month. Certainly the back end and the goalies didn't get any nods. So JT Miller for me squeaks in as a number three. Number two, I gave two to Petey. Again, I kind of flip-flopped on this. I wasn't sure which way to go. Now, Petey was our leading scorer for the month of October, point per game player, 9 points in nine games. For me, I just felt that there was one or two games where I didn't really notice him as much. So I will say, though, that one thing that really jumped out when I was looking at the stats for the month, Petey's points per 60 was 2.963, which was the highest on the team for anyone who's played over two games. Sheldon Dries actually had more, but he only played two games, and he had an assist in there, so his points per 60 was a lot higher. But Petey's points per 60 was the most on the team. But still, I just found that a couple of things I didn't notice him as much for a couple of games. Number one, I gave to Bo as well. Led the team in goals. He was also 58% in the faceoff circle, and I thought that Bo was just overall more noticeable. I will say as well, those three forwards were the highest three forwards for average power play time and shorthanded time per game for the Canucks. Were those three guys in different orders, but Miller, Petey, and Horvat getting used in both special team situations. And so for me, that was kind of the clinching factor. It gave me the nod for Miller over Kuzmenko when I was looking at it. Kuzmenko was fourth on the team in scoring for November. Not bad for a guy who's just showed up over here in North America.
No, you're right. And I wasn't actually counting the points scored last night for my reasoning for the three stars, but obviously it doesn't hurt when your most recent memory of the team is the game from last night. But I thought for Kuzmenko, sure, throughout the course of the month of October, I thought he was a little bit snake bitten in the sense that he had some great opportunities and was either just missing the net or hit the post. And he's so skilled with the puck on his stick, and he brings a dynamic to the team that I don't think we've seen with this iteration of Canucks. He's great down low. He makes plays out there, and he can distribute the puck to his line mates, but he can also shoot the puck. And I think I said this in an earlier episode that I think he's got a very deceptive shot, which is good, where he can kind of change the trajectory of the shot during his release, which very few players in the NHL can do. The only other guy that I can see doing it on somewhat of a more consistent basis than Kuzmenko would be a guy like Austin Matthews. But JT Miller, I agree with you. I know he has his gaffes. He's kind of turning into the Tyler Myers of the forward group, at least by a certain group of fans on Twitter. But he still produces points, and he still, you know, he still creates offense, and that's something that this team's definitely been lacking. Interesting though, you brought up the fact that him, Bo, and Petey had the most power play and PK time, but I believe I heard today at practice both Miller and Bo were not on any of the power or penalty kill rushes. They weren't in it for any PK, which I thought was interesting. So,
well, I mean, that could be a good thing. I mean, they're both averaging over 20 minutes a game right now, and so is Petey. They're all right around between 20 and 21 minutes a game, so maybe there's a little bit of a workload management that's coming in to that as guys get back. Going back to Kuzmenko, I agree with pretty much everything you said there. When I was watching Kuzmenko tape when he was over in Russia, I noticed just how strong he was down low and around the net. And the Canucks haven't really had that guy. And like Kuzmenko's first goal against Anaheim last night, and that was right in front of us, he was just found that open ice. He was just there, stick on the ice, easiest goal he's going to score when PD sees him like that. And that's something that he was struggling with a little bit. So when you mentioned snake bitten, it was a bit of snake bitten, but I also don't think he was finding the open ice. And that's something that I found the last few games in particular. And I don't think it's any coincidence that it's come with Ilya Mikheyev coming back into the lineup, who all of a sudden now has 6 points in 8 games. And that line has just looked fantastic. I think that it's allowed a little bit more open ice for Kuzmenko, because Petey often gets guys rushing to him. He gets double teamed, and Petey invites that now. The way he's playing this year, I mean, he looks very good from what we've seen so far. And so by doing that, if you have two guys rushing at Petey, and now you have Mikheyev kind of coming in and wrecking ball and causing some havoc, it creates more open ice for Kuzmenko. And I think I would not be surprised to see him creep into my 3 stars for the month. I mean, again, he's still fourth on the team in scoring right now, 10 points in 11 games, which is exactly what JT Miller has. They both have 6 goals and 4 assists, yet we praise one and we dump on the other a lot in this market. And look, neither one of the guys is without faults. I certainly don't think that JT Miller is without fault, but the guy's still pacing for like 75 points. So, I mean, you know, it's not like he's completely dropped off or anything. You'd think, listening to Canucks fans a lot of the time, that we have a guy here who's just an absolute pylon. It's like, guy's got 6 goals and 4 assists in 11 games. He's not playing terrible. He's not playing great at times. And mostly it's defensive. And hey, look, I think I said it to you last game, or said it to Riot Survivors or someone. I was like, look, there's that blind pass in the offensive zone. Got to cut those out 100%. But JT Miller is still a very useful player on this team. And, you know, one of my buddies, my buddy Craig, our buddy Craig, who's in our fantasy football league as well, he's a Habs fan. And he sent me a message the other day. It was after the game where JT Miller blocked the shot late in the game, and he had to get hobbled off. And that was the Seattle game, was it?
Yeah, I believe it was the Seattle game.
Yeah, you know, to get their first win. And he puts his body on the line. He sent me a message. He's like, man, I don't understand all this hate towards JT Miller. The guy's a warrior. He battles. And he does battle. He doesn't always make the best decisions, but he does battle. And so, you know, I just want to pump his tires a little bit, because, you know, looking at his stats lines, you know, the Canucks have 4 guys already in double-digit points, and he's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Louis Erickson, people. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like we're getting Louis Erickson production out of JT Miller. He's still a very productive offensive player. Does he make defensive gaffes and blind passes that frustrate Canucks fans? Of course. A lot of high-end offensive players take those high risks. And with those high risks can come high rewards and epic failures. And JT Miller is, at the moment, doing a lot more of those blind passes to the opposing team than to one of his teammates, but he's still producing at a great clip. I think Ilya Mikheyev, I think he's a guy, he's a potential front runner to crack the, you know, next month's 3 stars, or I guess this month's 3 stars, because he's looked really good. I agree. And, you know, he's good at creating separation, obviously, with his speed from defenders, and he's a smart player. He seems to have that hockey IQ that a lot of players, you just can't teach it. You either have it or you don't. And Mikheyev looks like he's fitting really well with that Kuzmenko and Petey line. And it's nice to have a guy who can play a two-way game like Mikheyev, but still put up some offensive numbers as well.
Yeah, someone asked me when I was on, or asked Clay and I when I was on Clay's post-game thing last week, whenever that was, what we thought of Kuzmenko. And we both, or sorry, not Kuzmenko, Mikheyev. And we're both kind of like, well, you know, he's just come back. You know, I don't think we've really seen. It's too early to get a tell. You know, he missed preseason. You know, kind of making a whole bunch of excuses, really, because we just didn't know. As I don't know what we got here with Mikheyev yet. As is he worth what we're paying him at this moment? No, he's not. And I do think he has a little bit more of an upside offensively than what we've seen. And I think now starting to see it. And I mean, again, it's only been a few games, but all of a sudden he's up to 6 points in eight games, and he's looking like he has found a home on that line, because I think Kuzmenko and Petey, those guys should be joined at the hip. Don't break them up. Those guys look fantastic together. And if Mikheyev is the right fit, adds a different blend on that line, let those guys do their things, he's going to pick up a bunch of secondary assists just from being on the ice with them.
Yeah, and because of his good two-way play, he actually helps Petey and Kuzmenko take a little bit more higher risks and chances in the offensive end, because they know they have a guy who's a responsible, fast skater that can get back if, for whatever reason, the player, a pass goes the opposite way. He's a guy who can get back and play that defensive, get in position defensively, which is great. I actually thought at the beginning of the year that Podkolzin, when he was on that line, but when Mikheyev was still out, I thought that line looked good as well. They weren't producing at the clip they seemingly are now, but yeah, Petey and Kuzmenko definitely have chemistry, and it's nice to see.
Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more out of Podkolzin, and just two assists in the 11 games so far. Hey, Doug, before we get even more into Canucks stuff, I mean, we could talk about that line all day. We've got Dan and Brendan, our two contributors on the show, who've got some stuff for us. Let's start with Dan this week, and let's jump into this week's edition of Dan's Feelings with Dan Mackles.
Hey, my name's Dan, and I have some feelings.
Please say hello to Dan.
Yo, give me something to Dan. Dan, Dan, Dan.
To Dan.
Dan, Dan, Dan.
To Dan, to Dan. Please say hello to Dan.
It's tough to find things positive to talk about at the moment. I was in attendance for the Canucks game on Tuesday versus the New Jersey Devils, and that was terrible. But instead of discussing the plight of the Vancouver Canucks right now and what direction they're going to take to hopefully turn things around or tear it down, I wanted to talk about something a little positive, and it was a very cool experience for me. For the Friday game versus Pittsburgh, I was able to take my 9-year-old son to his very first hockey game. And that was kind of a big deal because it reminded me of when I fell in love with hockey, and more specifically the Vancouver Canucks. And that was when I went to my very first game back on December 16th, 1988. They lost, unfortunately, but I think for me up until that point, hockey was just sort of something that my parents and siblings had on that prevented me from watching Knight Rider on time. So I always looked at it as a real pain in the butt. But when I finally sat down and experienced a game live, it was a Saturday night. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it was a hockey night in Canada. You saw the big lights, you saw the personalities that I had recognized from TV, and just being pulled into this world that was so much bigger than the little bubble that I was existing in was what hooked me into the passion that I have been able to carry on, over 3 decades now. I was able to sort of have a similar experience with my son, who, much like me at that age, was not interested in hockey. It was a distraction, something that took away from his ability to play Fortnite. I was a little bit concerned that perhaps going there, he would lose interest quick and it would be like, geez, Dad, how much time is left? That was not the case. Being there live, soaking in the electricity of the pregame, the crowd, fortunately for him, he was able to experience a 5-1 victory in what was pretty much the best performance of the team this year. Maybe, just maybe, it was the spark that will push him towards that passion that will lead on for a lifetime of sometimes good memories. Right now, not so much. So I'd be curious to know about you guys. Do you remember that moment where you absolutely fell in love with hockey, or more importantly, fell in love with the Vancouver Canucks? Please tell me about those moments and your feelings.
All right, thanks again for that, Dan. For those who aren't following him, that's on Twitter. That's Dan Mackles. I believe it's, I don't have it in front of me. I believe it's Dan, M-A-C-H-H-O-L-Z, but I could be wrong. Apologies, Dan. I'm pretty sure I got it right, though. I feel like I've had this conversation with him several times on how to spell it and how to pronounce it, and I still can't get it right. But that's kind of a nice, fun one to break things up a little bit here before we jump into some more Canucks-heavy content. I know we've talked about this in the past, like our first games and all that. But it is nice to hear. And also, I should note, Dan recorded that post the New Jersey game, but pre the Anaheim game. So that was in between the two games. But yeah, the first game, Doug, you remember your first NHL game?
I do, actually. My uncle Sandy actually took me to go see the Calgary Flames. It would have been, I want to say, 95 or 96. So I got to see, it was before, I think it was maybe 95, 96. I believe I got to see both Bure and McGillney play. It was before Bure ended up blowing his knee out that year. And I remember the Canucks won, I believe, 5-3 or 5-4 against the Calgary Flames. And that was my first game. We were kind of like right in the middle, center ice. And it was amazing. I was already a pretty big Canuck fan before that, watching it with my grandpa. But yeah, it was really cool. My Uncle Sandy took me to my first Canuck game. And yeah, it was a blast.
My first game, I'm sure I've said this before, was actually a New York Islanders game. Islanders Penguins in Nassau Coliseum. My grandparents live not far from there. And Mike Bossy scored the overtime goal. And I'm dating myself here. I believe it was 1986 or 87. I was a young kid. I went with my dad. We sat way up in the rafters, but it was the remnants of that great Islanders team. No Mario Lemieux, so it must have been the year before he was drafted. Lemieux wasn't in that game. Pittsburgh, I think that was the year that they ended up getting Lemieux after that. That was my first one. But then after that, like, I was already a hockey fan, and I became a hockey fan pretty young because of hockey cards. And everyone in my school was trading hockey cards, and the goalie cards were always the hot commodity. And through that, I kind of started getting into watching Hockey Night in Canada and started listening to games on the radio. My first Canucks game, though, would have been around 89 or 90. I'm not sure when, but I do know I went with my dad, Canucks Habs. We came over from Victoria for a weekend in Vancouver. My dad and I took the bus through Hastings Street out to the P&E, saw Canucks Habs. I remember being really surprised with how many red jerseys there were there. I knew there were going to be Habs fans, but I didn't expect it to be quite that half and half. And for anyone who grew up going to those kind of games at the Coliseum, it was a different energy as to going to games at Rogers. Like, you could feel the energy. You could feel sometimes the tension in the air. I mean, it was great. And that was it. I was hooked. After that, buses from Victoria, or companies, started chartering buses for the Sunday afternoon games over here in Vancouver. And you'd catch a bus from Victoria, included the ferry. You'd go out, see Canucks play an afternoon game on Sunday. It was usually against the Jets. I just remember it always seemed to be against the Jets catching those games. And I think occasionally the Flames as well. And I was hooked. So, Doug, just one other thing in there. Do you remember when you kind of first became a hockey fan with all that as well?
I do, actually. I think this is a story I shared on our very first episode of the podcast. And it's actually why and where we got the name of the podcast, or that episode, pardon me. And it was Perry Mason. And I remember I was at my grandpa's house, and he was sitting in the living room, and I walked in there, and he was watching, you know, the old black and white Perry Mason with Raymond Burr. And I was like, what's this? I don't want to watch this. Like, let's put cartoons on or something like that. And again, it's like, whatever, 6, 7 p.m. There's no cartoons on generally around that time. And you don't have things. There wasn't Netflix or anything like that where you could just, you know, instantly have whatever you wanted to watch appear for you. So he changed the channel and actually put on a Canuck game. And I believe the Canucks, I forget who they were playing that night, but it was the first time I'd ever actually watched a Canuck game. And I do remember one thing, and he was kind of my first favorite Canuck. And I remember I was actually really upset when he got eventually traded, and it was Garth Butcher. And I remember Garth Butcher got into a fight that game. Go figure, eh? But yeah, watching the Canucks for the first time with my grandpa in the living room and making him change the channel from Perry Mason to the Canuck game, and then seeing Garth Butcher getting into a fight, I was kind of hooked ever since. And then that was just something that my grandpa and I, was like a bond we had together. What about you, Pete?
First favorite Canuck for me, Tony Tanti, because he was a leading scorer at the time when I started following the team. Quickly became Petri Skriko, especially when I found out that Petri was Peter in Finnish. But those are my first two. But yeah, grade one, trading hockey cards, flicking hockey cards. Man, I wish we didn't flick those hockey cards now, man. That was... That was a good year for hockey cards. I actually have the complete set from that year. Great set of cards. But I still remember that year, amazing set. It had the Yzerman, LaFontaine, Neely rookies. But we would always trading cards. The goalies were always the big ones. That was what first really turned me on to hockey and going to Cougars games in Victoria and finding out very quickly that one of the coolest looking goalies, Grant Fuhr, played for the Cougars and he was on the Stanley Cup winning teams. I thought that was super cool as well. Grant Fuhr was one of my first favorite players because of his Cougars connection, his wicked mask, and he had cool goalie cards. That's all it really took. The cool goalie cards are always worth a lot more than, doesn't matter how many points you put up. If you're a cool goalie card, that was what you wanted. Doug, let's jump into Brendan's segment now. The good, the bad, and the other. Let's see what he's got for us this week. All right, Brendan, thanks for joining us again. What do you got for the good this week?
All right, it's nice to have some wins to discuss for my best this week. We've got three of them. All sort of different. You know, the first win in Seattle was always going to be tough. It was always going to be that one where you had to slog it out and just try to get that win. I mean, it happens quite frequently with teams that go on losing streak. That first win after a long losing streak is always going to be tough. But they found a way, which is what you need to do when you've gone through the struggles that they have. The game against Pittsburgh was the one that I liked. They played really low event hockey, really didn't give up much. I mean, there were some issues, but I mean, every team's going to have some mistakes in a game. It's just, you're not going to go an entire game without them. They showed signs. I mean, we'll get to the game against the Devils. I mean, the game against Anaheim, again, they showed signs. They played low event hockey for the majority of that game. They kind of knew, you know, our forwards are better than your forwards. And we're going to find a way to score eventually. We're confident in that. So as long as we keep Anaheim to the outside and keep them out of our zone, which they did, you know, quite well for a lot of that game, you know, we're going to find a way to get our goals. And they did. Now, that's not to just gloss over the issues, because there were some issues. And you know what? I'm going to get to those right now.
All right. Now hit us up with something bad.
My worst for this week, you know, I mean, it has to be the continued defensive issues, the PEK, obviously, which is just abysmal. And I mean, I've been trying to go and watch other teams and see what they do, you know, I mean, and not necessarily, like, I mean, you watch a team like Carolina and the pressure that they put, you know, which is, you know, phenomenal, but that, you know, not every team can do that. So, you know, you watch, you know, Calgary, and I did watch Calgary against Nashville and how they stopped that cross seam pass. You know, you watch that goal against the power play goal they gave up against the Devils, and it's too easy. And so it's hard to say what's the issue. You know, is it the scheme or is it the players? I mean, and it's probably a little bit of both. You know, I mean, in portions, I mean, through the majority of the Pittsburgh game, you know, they played low event hockey. And in the game against Anaheim, they really started playing low event hockey for good swaths of that game and then sort of lost their way. So it's really about gaining that consistency. Can you gain that consistency, that confidence of knowing, you know what, if we just play the right way, we're good enough, especially up front. I mean, this Canucks team is very good up front, you know, with enough scoring. So if we do the right things defensively as a unit, trust each other, you know, get pucks in deep, cycle, which they did a really good job against Anaheim. Now, granted, Anaheim's not the greatest team in the world. If you do that consistently and find a way to become a consistent team that way, you know, in theory, they should start winning games, especially if Thatcher Demko can turn his game around, and obviously Spencer Martin's played, you know, relatively well. So it's just really about finding that consistency.
And let's finish it off. What do you got for the last bit here?
All right, and for my last, I'm going to step away from hockey
And I'm going to go to a different sport because I don't think it has gotten the notoriety that it deserves, and that's tennis. And one player in particular, Felix Auger-Aliassime, who just turned 22 and around a month ago or 2 months ago, and he just won his 16th match in a row. He's won three straight tournaments in a row, 16 matches in a row, is in the semifinal of his current tournament after beating a top 20 player in the world with ease. And I mean, he's just on this incredible run. And I don't think in this country it's getting the notoriety that it deserves. I get we're in hockey season and you know, we're not in major season for tennis, which is where most people, you know, pay attention to it. But I mean, it's absolutely remarkable, and the young man deserves some credit because he had a rough year, and then all of a sudden he just turned it around. He figured it out, showed some great grit and determination to try to come back from, you know, what was looking like to be a very subpar season by his standards, and now it's turning into, you know, what I think most tennis fans hope is his breakout, that he's now. He's now found his way, and even though he wasn't that bad to begin with, and is on his way to hopefully becoming the first male tennis player in this country to win a major singles title. It could very well happen in 2023 because he's showing the signs that we all hoped that he could, and now he's starting to put it together, and let's hope that 2023 is that year for Felix Auger-Aliassime to take that next step to become one of the truly best players in the world.
All right, thanks for that, Brendan. And for those who don't know, you can follow him on Twitter at @Jabbo_Vancouver. Another really good follow. Both Brendan and Dan are great follows on Canucks Twitter. Hey, that's why we have them on here, because good guys, good follows, and always have a lot of good takes out there. Just quickly start with the non-Canucks thing in there. Felix, man, you know, I'm a tennis fan. What he's doing is pretty incredible. He's number 8 in the world right now on the men's side. He's won 3 straight tournaments, I think 15 straight matches going up to today or yesterday. It's a pretty incredible story and great to see. And I do agree. I don't think he's getting enough credit right now, but that's also the time of year. There's so much happening, right? You've got like every sport's got stuff going on, and I think Felix is getting lost in the World Series, the peak of NFL season, NBA starting up, and you got guys like Jamal Murray back as well, and the Raptors playing, and of course Canucks and all the Canadian teams. And I think Felix has gotten a little bit lost in all this, but what he's doing is really special.
Yeah, like you said, Pete, I'm actually a really big tennis fan as well, and it's pretty cool and it's pretty incredible to see a Canadian kid doing as well as he's doing in tennis. I think one of the issues with tennis, and it's kind of the same thing with golf, it's everybody holds the majors to such a higher standard than everything else. And until you see someone actually win a major, it doesn't seem to hold or carry some of the same weight or get as much attention. I know Bianca Andreescu won a major a few years ago. I believe it was the US Open she won. And that catapulted her into stardom. But then unfortunately, she kind of like has been injury riddled since her big win at the US Open. Hopefully Felix can potentially win a major, because I think that would really get more eyes on him and get the proper attention that he's already deserving from the media and across the country. But yeah, it's great to see a Canadian kid. And also, you know, with Roger Federer retiring and Novak Djokovic not only being older, but, you know, obviously he still hasn't got vaccinated and he's not allowed to participate in some of these countries, Australia being one, as far as, you know, one of the majors out there. So that limits in the tournaments he can play. And then obviously Rafael Nadal has been injured and he's older. It's actually, we are starting to see that next generation of young, talented tennis players emerge. And it's cool to see a Canadian kid like Felix being the front runner to be the next great tennis superstar.
Yeah, ranked number 8 in the world. Number 7, Novak Djokovic. So he's right behind him, 13 years younger than Novak himself. The good, hey, 3 wins in 4 games. That's something we said right near the start. Not always the prettiest, but they go in as wins. What are you pulling away from these wins right now? Like, yeah, we've won 3 out of 4, but I still hear a lot of people being like, oh, well, they allowed 5 goals against Anaheim. It's like, yeah, they did, but they scored 8. And I'm not saying their defensive game is perfect by any stretch, but and that's something, you know, else that Brandon's talked about. But 3 wins, 4 games, it's something to hang your hat on. Although, I mean, you still got another game here against Nashville, and then you got a tough road trip coming up. So you're not out of the woods yet and counting your blessings.
Yeah, I mean, the Canucks have gotten 6 of a possible 8 points, which I think is great considering how poorly they started the first 5 games of the season. Are they the perfect games for, are they a full 60-minute win? No, they're not. But they're winning games. They're getting their confidence on the offensive side, which is a start. And I do think as the year goes on, they will start to shore up some of their defensive deficiencies. They'll get and break down their PK a little bit better, and hopefully they're a little bit better at defending against the opposing power play. But a win's a win, and even every team throughout the course of the year is going to have those ugly wins that it's like, oh, this was a barn burner. You know, it was an 8-6 victory, or, you know, last night it was what, 7-5, 8-5, or whatever it ended up being. It's like, well, hey, man, a win's a win. We still got the 2 points. We were the better team. Spencer Martin, our backup, played that game as well last night. In theory, if Demko was in net, I know Demko hasn't looked great to start the year, but, you know, maybe the Canucks would have walked away with an 8-3 win, and people wouldn't be downplaying or shitting all over the defense as much as they are.
Yeah, so that was obviously Brandon's bad this week is the defensive structure and the PK. The PK just can't quite get it together. This is something that we've seen going back to last year. It's constantly an issue. A part of it, in my opinion, power plays around the league are just better right now. Power plays move differently. And Vancouver's even, like, I watch the way they work the power play. It's different. The teams are much better at it. So I do think that penalty killing percentages in general are going down. However, having said that, the Canucks have been notoriously bad on the PK. Defensive structure. We blame the blue line for everything in Vancouver. It's always the blue line. Look, for me, it's not just the blue line. It's everyone on the ice, all 6 skaters. When you have 6 skaters on the ice, including the goalie, it's on everybody. And this isn't just a blue line thing. Now, the blue line is not without its problems, but there have been a lot of lazy plays by the forwards coming back, giving up odd man rushes, not playing proper defensive structure in their own zone. This is just something they have to keep working on. And I'm really hoping that, Chris Faber was reporting today how their players staying on after practice. And he's like, is it a coincidence that this is all after listening to Kevin Bieksa? You know, maybe the biggest thing we can get out of the Kevin Bieksa night is that he instilled something. It's like, look, he wasn't calling anyone out, but what he was very obviously saying was, look, if you want this, you got to work for it. You got to go the extra. You've got to really want it. And for me, that's really the fundamentals of the defensive structure with this team is what they have to come back to is getting to this point of playing the basics, playing properly in their own zone. And it's not just the blue line. It's everybody.
Yeah, and I liked what Bieksa said during his speech as well. It's like, hey, if you're the energy guy, then you should be in the gym practice, you know, lifting weights and working on your conditioning because that's who you are. You're the energy guy. He was kind of saying, look, figure out who you are. If you're the power play specialist or you're the goal scorer, then you should be on the ice shooting pucks. You know, you should be shooting 50 more pucks than everybody else because that's who you are. You're the goal scorer type of thing, right? And just focus. Obviously, you need to focus on everything being a professional athlete. But focus on the skill that separates you from everybody else and what makes, you know, what your bread and butter is. And I like that. And I think that kind of was a bit of a wake-up call. And the other thing, when Canucks PR had posted the speech online, you could actually see everyone in the dressing room was just fixated on him and, like, listening to every word he said. And yeah, man, I mean, I was motivated, you know what I mean? I wanted to dress up and go out there and skate for the Canucks as well. The other thing, Pete, you touched on the defense. Well, Brendan actually technically touched on the defense. And the one thing I think we both kind of forgot to mention during the course of this episode so far, and we're what, close to 40 minutes in, is the Canucks also made two trades last week, which we haven't actually talked about. One of them being Ethan Bear getting added to the defense, which I do think will help. It was only his second game last night against the Ducks. I do think as he gets more amalgamated with the team and their defensive play and structure, that he should help this team defensively while also being able to generate a little bit of offense on the back end as well.
Geez, yeah, you know, that's funny. Lost in all this were those two trades. Well, yeah, let's start with the Ethan Bear trade. He's looked all right the first couple of games. I think he's still getting some rust off his system, having not really played a lot. Also bringing in Peterson to play in Abbotsford, who I know he's already scored over there as well. I mean, look, this is a good deal for Vancouver. It's something that all it really costs you is a fifth round pick. It's not the end of the world. You also get salary retained by Carolina as well to make this deal work. They had to retain $400K. Lane Peterson had 2 points in his first game with Abbotsford, so he's played one game down there. He's got a goal and assist. I know I've talked to some people who've watched him play as well, and he's a career AHLer, but he gives you a little more center depth. For me, very low risk. Ethan Bear is an RFA at the end of this deal, so you control his rights. If you don't like what you see, you don't have to qualify him. And I think that's why they also got Peterson in the deal, as a case there's something else in case you don't qualify him, so you at least get something for your fifth round pick. And then the Stadnicka trade. Look, I know some people were quite upset about this one. I was off the Michael DiPietro wagon. I don't think he is going to be an NHL player. I did at one point, and I hope he proves me wrong. But for me, he had fallen down to our number five goalie. And I know that's, you know, Colin Delia is our number four, but Artur Szilas made Michael DiPietro expendable. They're trying to find a place for him, you know, and it sounds like he's still playing with Abbotsford, which is kind of weird. I think he's on loan there, but whatever. Myron Berg, again, kind of an interesting one. I know that some people were pretty high on him. I don't like giving him up, but you got to give up something to get something. I mean, Stadnicka is a former first round pick. Again, haven't seen too much from him yet, but let's see what happens. I think that one, there's a little more risk involved with that trade, but I do understand why they did it. And look, he's 23 years old. He's picked up a point already with the Canucks. I believe on the Joshua goal last night, he got an assist. But these are moves that do fit with what management has said, is that they're going to try and get guys in the 23 to 26 range and not give up future assets. Now, you can certainly make the case that Jonathan Myrenberg, at least, is a future asset. He's a recent late-round draft pick. And Mikey DiPietro, you could, although I'm not really on that wagon anymore. I think both of these moves, I think the Carolina move, extremely low risk, worth the shot. And Stadnicka, hey, if he turns into any sort of player, we got something. If not, the jury's going to be out for a little while on that trade. But I understand why they did it. What I don't like is that it's making it harder, at least for some of our Canucks young guys like Jack Rathbone and Nils Höglander and even William Lockwood to get into the lineup. That's the only thing that that I don't like.
Yeah, I mean, going to the Stadnicka trade, I would say, like, Jonathan Myrenberg, he's a right-shot defenseman. If he was a left-shot defenseman, I don't think there would have been as much hoopla about the Canucks trading him for Stadnicka. It seems like, and I understand why people were frustrated or didn't really understand it, it's like you're trading from one of your, if not your weakest position in the organization, right-shot defenseman. You know, why couldn't you have traded a guy like a Jacob Truscott instead, who's a left-shot defenseman, who, again, I like Truscott, but, you know, you've got Truscott, you've got Yanni Yermo, there's the Russian kid they drafted this past year, who, by all accounts, seems like a really good pick for a seventh-round pick. I believe they got him in the seventh round. So I get that, but Meyenberg is still a long shot to make the NHL, and Stadnicka is an NHL player. He's playing in the NHL, and I think what's very interesting about the three main players in these trades, right? So, I mean, some people would say, well, Meyenberg's the main player in that trade. But if you look at Mikey DiPietro, Studnicka, and Ethan Bear, all three of those players in the past 2.5 years have been affected by COVID. Obviously, because of the taxi squads, Mikey DiPietro being on the Canucks, being on the taxi squad, he literally just sat in the rafters all year and didn't get any NHL games in, and it kind of stunted his development. Jason Studnicka, you heard, the Boston GM, I forget who it is now, former player. Anyways, he said Studnicka was on a really good trajectory and he was looking to be a legitimate everyday NHL player. And then unfortunately COVID happened and it kind of stunted his growth with the team. Ethan Bear contracted COVID last year after going to Carolina and he never really was the same. He never really got that step back. He had some kind of long-term effects from COVID and he kind of was always a step behind when he got back and he fell into Rob Brindamore's doghouse. So if you look at it from that, I think these are some low risk, potential high rewards for the Canucks. And I mean, Ethan Bear, like you said, to give up a fifth round pick for him and a career HLer, you control him at the end of the year, his RFA rights. If you like what you see in the next 6 months, 5 months, whatever it is, great, you re-sign him. If you don't like it, you don't qualify him, he becomes an unrestricted free agent. Getting Carolina to eat $400K of his salary, I thought was a shrewd move as well. And Studnicka, there's a lot of guys who actually still think Studnicka has some untapped potential. The one thing that this team is really missing is that elusive third line center. You know, I know we all thought Adam Gaudette was going to be that third line center for this team, but we don't really have it right now. And with the long-term injury to Curtis Lazar, he's probably going to miss the next month and a half. 4 to 6 weeks, I believe, is the time frame they said for his injury. The Canucks needed to make a move. And Sheldon Dries, who, again, he's been admirable in the games he's played. I know he put up some really good points for Abbotsford last year, but he's not an everyday NHL Eller. Nils Amon is already playing above his head. I don't think anyone expected Nils Amon, and I'm not saying he didn't deserve to make the team out of camp, but I don't think anyone expected this guy to be playing every game of the year and, you know, essentially become the fourth line center because of this injury to Curtis Lazar. So it made sense to make that trade for Studnicka. And like I said, there are a lot of guys in the media who actually think highly of Studnicka. And yes, his trajectory and his development stunted the last year or so, but from what people in Boston are saying, they kind of blame the COVID season for that.
Few things in there. The Russian defenseman you're talking about, Kirill Kudryatsev, plays with the Sioux Greyhounds, 7th round pick this year. Studnicka. So I got a buddy who's a Bruins fan. I know, but he's actually a pretty nice guy. He said, so I asked him, I'm like, hey, what can you tell me about Jason Studnicka? He's like, look, this guy really highly regarded when Boston picked him. Was looking good, kind of fell off a cliff, but he said a lot of Boston fans do not like that trade at all. Like they're like they gave up on him too easily. Kind of similar echoes to the Mikey DiPietro situation here, which is again probably why they were all switched around. Like you said, it's part of COVID. But he says a lot of Bruins fans do not like that trade and think that they gave up on Studnicka too early. You're definitely right. Lazar came in. And he was playing his role, fourth line center. Nils Amon, I almost gave my third star of the month to, just because I thought he, for what he's done, incredibly admirable. I always like to kind of, I know you do as well, when you can, take those dark horse ones. But I had him on, I think it's kind of my fifth star of the month for this month. But you can never have too much center depth. So you get a 23-year-old former first rounder. Take the shot at him. And this is something that, again, management has said they're going to do. They said they're going to take some shots on guys 23 to 26. Travis Dermott fits into that bill as well. Bring them in. See what you got. I mean, yeah, okay, we gave up a 2021 fifth rounder in Jonathan Myrenberg, who is a right D, but you've offset that by bringing in Ethan Bear, who's a 25-year-old NHL-proven right side D. So actually, at the end of the day, in my opinion, the right D is in a better spot. Your centers are in a better spot. You've given up your number 5 goalie, who, again, I wasn't too keen on, and you've given up a 5th round pick. And there's going to be plenty of opportunities to recoup picks, whatever. But, you know, it's, for me, I'd like, I'm like, hey, let's see what happens with this. I'm certainly one of those fans who wants to see more Jack Rathbone in the lineup. And Nils Höglander when he can. It is getting crowded in there. But I think that's also, you know, this team, from what we've seen, there does need to be some injections of chemistry here and new faces and just kind of changing the dynamic of the team. So, I think that's a big part of it as well. And look, the team has fared better, I think, since these guys have come along. It's only been a couple games. And I shouldn't say completely fared better because, look, I mean, the first game those guys played was the New Jersey game, and that wasn't a good game, but that's also a part of it. You know, first game, couldn't get it together. I thought last night I was really trying to keep an eye out for both of them. Didn't notice either one too much, but that's not necessarily a bad thing for the roles that they play.
No, I agree. Bear made a couple of nice plays for breakout passes and stuff like that. And he pinched a little bit too, and, you know, pinched in the offensive end. And I forget who it was trying to find him with the puck, but it missed. And then he quickly skated back to get back in defensive position. Studnicka, like you said, ended up with an assist on the Joshua goal. And I liked what I saw. I thought he won his board battles for the majority of the time. And he's a guy, like I said, the more he gets amalgamated with the team, much like Bear, I think there's some untapped potential with him. And Bear, he was great in Edmonton. They traded him for Warren Fogle, I believe it was. And for whatever reason, he just didn't really make that same impact in Carolina. Obviously, he did get COVID, and I think that affected him. And for whatever reason, he just wasn't in Rob Brind'Amour's good books. Brind'Amour was kind of hard on him and whatnot. And I think Bear getting a chance here is great. I think it's really going to help this team. I think right now, like you said, Pete, it is a little bit crowded with guys like Höglander and Rathbone. They need to play. And, you know, today, interestingly enough, I believe during the line rushes for practice, the guy that was left off was Pod Colson. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Pod Colson actually get scratched for the next game, which doesn't make sense considering they just won this game. But, maybe to try to send a message to Pod Colson. Boudreau did this last year. There was a game where he scratched Höglander for one game. And then the very next game, it was Pod Colson who sat. And Pod Colson responded really well to that. Höglander, I believe, ended up getting injured not that much longer after that. So we couldn't really tell what kind of effect it had on him. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see Pod Colson get a healthy scratch here as kind of a little bit of a wake-up call to get Höglander back in the lineup. But you're right. They need to make a decision with some of these young guys. You can't have Jack Rathbone sitting in the bleachers watching games in the press box all the time.
So we're 11 games into the season, and the Canucks have already played 11 defensemen, and we haven't seen anything from Travis Dermott yet either. So right now, if everyone was healthy, who are your starting six defensemen and their pairings?
That's tough. I mean, it's hard because, like, right now, OEL does not look good. Like, he is really struggling this year, and I don't see how you get him out of the lineup given his contract and whatnot. So, I mean, your top pair, I would probably go with OEL and Ethan Bear. I just think Bear and OEL pairing could complement each other relatively well. For the next pair, and again, it's tough because I do really like Kyle Burrows. And I really like Luke Shen, but I would probably go with Luke Shen and Quinn Hughes. And then for the other pair, if everyone's healthy, it's probably Travis Dermott and Tyler Myers.
Yeah, I think, I want to say, I love the idea of Hughes and Bear, just so you can say we have the Huggy Bear combo out there. I like Hughes with Shen though. I still really like Hughes with Shen.
Yep.
I think that's just a fun pairing. After that, I'd still, if everyone's healthy, you know, I'd be all right with OEL and Myers going back at it. I know OEL has not been great, but, I'd like to think that there could be more here, at least for now. So I'd put OEL with Myers. And then, after that, it gets tricky. If he's healthy, you know, I think my third pairing would be Dermott and Rathbone. If, if everyone's healthy, I think I would do that. I mean, it's tough though.
Where does Bear play then?
Bear. Yeah, I know. That's it, right? Like, I just left Ethan Bear off. I don't know. Like, I just really liked what I saw from Travis Dermott. I thought he was very effective. Maybe I'd go Dermott and Bear right now. Let's, you know what? Maybe I'd send Rathbone down, go Dermott and Bear. Kyle Burrows then is your number seven. Poolman on IR. Breezeball would be my first call up. Riley Stillman then, like all of a sudden he's kind of in no man's land. Yeah, man, it's it's good to have options. The problem was the Canucks had like four of their starting to seven defensemen out for a while there. And that certainly doesn't make you anything easy when you're every day it's different personnel. And they have been making a lot of personnel changes, even when they win, as you've alluded to. It's good to have options. But I think my starting six, what I would do if everyone was healthy, I'd send Rathbone to Abbotsford so he could play instead of sitting in the press box. I think, you know, he's only got four games so far this year. If he's not going to get in, send him to Abby. And then, yeah, go Hughes, Shen, OEL Myers, Bear, Dermott, Burrows is your number seven. And then you could keep Stillman around as a number eight, I guess, as well. And then you have Breezeball and Rathbone you can call up. I mean, that's not terrible. It's just you need to get everyone healthy and you need to really work on the system. And again, you need the forwards to buy in and you need to start getting some really grade A goaltending from the goaltenders, especially Thatcher Demko. He hasn't been able to steal one yet. You know, we're 11 games in. He hasn't stole a game yet this year.
Yeah. And I was a little bit surprised that Boudreau started Spencer Martin last night. And I don't think Spencer Martin played relatively well. Like, he made the saves he should have made, but there was a couple of saves that.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure he would have liked to have back, but I agree. I'm waiting for Demko to steal a game because I think that's kind of, and Demko's kind of, you know, he's a little bit like Luongo, where he starts the seasons a little bit slow, and then usually, you know, a month and a half in is kind of when he starts to dial in and he really starts to hone his game, and you see that Thatcher Demko Canucks fans are used to seeing these last 2-3 years.
Yeah, let's hope so, because that's obviously a big part of what this team needs to win. Hey, I was looking at some stats. So tomorrow, the day we're releasing this, so I guess this will be for today for the listeners, Canucks play the Predators. It is expected to be UC Saros against Thatcher Demko. Those two goalies combined for a 3-11-2 record to start the year right now.
Yeah, that's crazy. I believe they were two of the goalies that played the most games last year as well. So I wonder if there's still like a little bit of hangover fatigue from last year for the amount of games they played. But Saros, he was in Vezina consideration. Like, I mean, it was kind of wrapped up by Shesterkin last year, but Saros was a guy that people were talking about as far as a Vezina candidate. I think what he and the Nashville Predators did last year kind of unexpectedly, a lot of that was because of the goaltending they were getting from Saros. And it's interesting that both those goalies, I mean, Jacob Markstrom's another guy who's struggling at the moment as well. There's a lot of kind of high upper echelon goalies that haven't really found their game early in the season.
Yeah, I believe both of them were two of the top four goalies last year in terms of minutes played. I'd have to double check that. And I know Markstrom was right in there. And I think Vasilevsky and Tristan Jarry were right up there too. But yeah, it's just kind of interesting. I mean, look, we all know we need Demko to hit form. But again, like I said, way back, to go back to what Brendan was saying that started all this, defense and PK, look, dead last penalty killing in the NHL right now. That's got to improve. Team defense, not just the blue line, as banged up as it's been. Everyone needs to figure it out and play in their own zone. And that's why the PK has not been good, is because they haven't been able to figure out what's going on in their own zone. And now you're trying to do that with a man down. It's just, it's too much for this team right now. So they've really got to figure out, forwards got to figure out their jobs. Defense got to figure out their jobs. Goalies got to be on it. That's the biggest key. Cause look, we can score goals. We know we can score goals. This team can score goals. But you're not going to win just on pure offense in this day and age. So for me, I want to see tighter team defense, tighter PK. Because look, Nashville tomorrow, as I said, and then it's a 5-game road trip. And this is going to be a tough 5-game road trip. It's going through the Eastern Canadian teams. And you know what that's like. You know what the media is like. Oh, Vancouver's coming to town. You get Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, and then you hit Boston and Buffalo. Hey, this is that's a tough road trip. I mean, Boston is what, like 10-1? Buffalo's been playing well. Montreal's been playing better than they thought. Leafs have been struggling, but they still got a lot of offensive firepower. And Ottawa is a lot of people's kind of sleeper pick this year for a team to surprise. So this is a tough road trip coming up. Nashville is a good team, too. This is an incredibly tough stretch of games. I'm going to include that game tomorrow with these next six games. I mean, you've got to tighten up because there's some incredible firepower from some of those teams that's going to be coming at you.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, Pete. The forwards have to buy into the defensive structure and play. It's easy to score goals this day and age in the NHL. I mean, relatively speaking. But it's that commitment to playing defense and to get back and to know what position you're meant to be in. That's what we haven't seen on a consistent basis from this team. And I do think this upcoming road trip is going to really test this team. And I know people are frustrated with management and how patient they seemingly have been with this roster. I know people wanted more sweeping changes in the offseason. I think a lot of us thought that JT Miller could be traded in the offseason given his contract status and Bo Horvat's contract status. But they re-upped JT Miller. Horvat is looking like he's going to cost them more and more as they wait. So there's that potential as well. Horvat is second in the NHL in goals this year, tied with Erik Karlsson. Yes, the corpse of Erik Karlsson has come back to haunt all of us who didn't take him in fantasy this year. but yeah, Horvat's having a great start to the season, and I think fans are a little bit impatient and they want to see more sweeping changes, and especially how bad this team started out the gate. But I think this next road trip should really kind of set the tone of where this team potentially will be heading into American Thanksgiving and eventually Christmas. That's usually when you've got a better gauge on whether or not you're a playoff team. I know a few years ago, St. Louis was dead last in the NHL. I believe it was after Christmas, and yet they ended up going on that incredible run, making it to the Stanley Cup Finals and eventually winning the Stanley Cup. I don't think that's going to happen with this current team. But it is going to be interesting, and there does seem to be a bit of logjam with players. I don't know if the Canucks continue to struggle, if they can move a guy like Tyler Myers to open up some more spots for guys on their defense and free up some money, because I know that was another big thing that management said, is they wanted to kind of get a little bit of cap relief and have that, you know, a little bit of play on the cap. Who knows? But this next five-game road trip, it's going to be extremely important for this team and what the rest of the season is going to look like.
November 15th, the Canucks play the Sabres. That'll be the last game of that road trip. You're getting closer to American Thanksgiving, which I always say is the barometer. By that point, though, on November 15th, the Canucks have played 17 games, and we're getting even closer towards American Thanksgiving, which is on the 24th. So by that point, American Thanksgiving, the Canucks will have played 20 games, exactly a quarter of the way. So I really do think this road trip is going to be very telling to what happens with the Canucks for the rest of the year. Doug, I think we should take this into the free pour.
All right, it's that time of the episode for the free pour open floor segment. And I wanted to talk about a Mexican restaurant that I kind of recently discovered in the city. I would see the name, and I believe there was a car of someone who either, I don't know if they were the manager or they owned the restaurant, but I would see the car kind of parked close to where I live. And it's a restaurant called Taco Mio. And I tried their food recently, and their elote, which is Mexican street corn that has, like, you know, mayonnaise and some seasoning and some spices on it, was absolutely to die for. Incredible. Taco Mio, I believe they're in Strathcona. If you're ever in that neighborhood, or if you know in this spot as a great spot, I'm just sharing it because I recently discovered some of the best Mexican food I've tried in a long time in the city. And not that Vancouver has bad Mexican food. I actually think we have really good Mexican food in the city. But Taco Mio is definitely a spot worth checking out, especially their elote.
Yeah, I've had this stuff before, man. They are good. For me, I just wanted to talk about a show that I went and saw Sunday night down at the Commodore. I saw the amazing Lee Field and the Expressions. For those who don't know Lee Fields, we'll have to probably put him into the outro tracks one of these days. Won't do it this episode. That's a little too obvious, but I'll sneak him in here at some point. I always call him the modern day James Brown, the second hardest working man in showbiz, and he sure came across that way. And this guy, he's got to be at least in his 70s. Just owns it, man. He just incredible soul singer, incredible voice, a lot of fun at the show. So I just wanted to give a shout out. Listen, that's some more music for you folks to listen to. Lee Fields and the Expressions. New album just came out this week as well. So go give that a listen if you're in the mood for some modern soul. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Episode 126, Season 4, Episode 6, just about in the books. Much better episode to talk Canucks with. Also, just dug a couple of other things going on around the league. The Ottawa Senators up for sale, and Wrexham owner Ryan Reynolds among the people reportedly interested.
I mean, look... I'm not the biggest fan of the current ownership in Vancouver, so if Ryan Reynolds did decide to venture into owning a hockey team, obviously, you know, I talked about Welcome to Wrexham and how much I really enjoy that show and just the journey him and Rob McElhenney have been on to owning that football club. I'd be incredibly jealous if he ended up becoming an owner of the Ottawa Senators. I think it would be good for the NHL. It would obviously be good for the Ottawa Senators, but yeah, I think it would be good, but I would much prefer him to get a stake in ownership for the hometown here, the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I hear that. I also, like I said, Welcome to Wrexham. Great show. Thank you for the recommendation. We switched recommendations there, The Bear and Welcome to Wrexham. That's a great show. Last night as well, while we were at the Canucks game, Philly and Houston playing two games at once. I thought that was super weird. And like, just what are the odds of that? That they're playing the Thursday Nighter and the World Series. I just thought that was strange. So I just wanted to get that in. And World Series, man, we saw a no-hitter in the World Series in Game 4. I thought that was pretty cool. Four pitchers combining for the Astros to pitch a no-hitter. Only the second one in World Series history. That's pretty crazy as well.
Yeah, I mean, the World Series has actually been very entertaining. I know a lot of people thought that the Astros, at least on paper, would run away with it. But it's been a back-and-forth series so far. And to see a no-hitter is obviously historic, even though... You know, four pitchers had to get to that point. It's still a history-making night for the Astros and for baseball fans across the world.
Yeah, again, great time of year for sports. Only a couple more baseball games left in the season. Well, if we're lucky, a couple more. Thanks again to Brendan and Dan for contributing. As always, you can find them on Twitter at Dan Mackles and at Jabbo_Vancouver. I'm at Pete_Gas, and do check out our playlist on Spotify, the Canucks Speakeasy Outro Playlist. Give that a listen. All the music goes on there that we use in the outro.
You can give me a follow on Twitter at Doug Venn. Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Canucks Speak. As always, thanks for listening.
Hasta luego.